Okay, so hi.
Hi.
Who are you?
I'm Anil Dash.
Uh-huh. And so we're here at South by Southwest, and I'm asking people about music and like how they acquire music,
mm-hmm.
how they manage it, what they do with it, all of that stuff. So my first question is, what's the first time you acquired music? What was it?
The first record ever that I got? I think I got the vinyl LP of Stevie Wonder's In Square Circle in 1985 from, if memory serves, joining the Columbia House Record Club, which I later found out doesn't actually pay any royalties to the artist.
Wow, that's a great example. Cool, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, but companies are allowed to steal music, so it's okay.
Well, so how do you acquire it? And what did you think about that album? Was it kind of like Stevie Wonder fell off in Square Circle?
Yeah, of course. It's not his best work, but...
It followed the Woman in Red soundtrack?
Yeah, it was around then, and at 10 years old, I don't think I really appreciated the nuance. There is one fantastic song in there, Overjoyed, that I still love, so I'm conflicted about that.
It's got some nice harp in that song.
Yes.
So, how do you acquire music now?
A variety of different means. I steal some. I get some through Amazon. It's interesting, if I'm on the road, I buy CDs. Like a lot of times rental cars don't have any other way to play music, so I end up, getting a CD and ripping it and then dealing with it later.
So when you, so you don't make any qualms about stealing music then?
Well, I used to work in the record industry, and my experience with not the artists, but the executives led me to believe it's an industry that deserves the fate that it has created for itself.
So to what lengths do you go?
Now, for an independent artist, I don't do that.
Okay. So what's that distinction about?
The distinction is about, I believe in supporting artists. What I find is I'm primarily a pop music fan. I love very mainstream popular music, but I like the edges of it. I like remixes and B-sides and obscurities and album cuts and all that stuff. And they treat their catalog with complete contempt. Right, so I can go to whoever the most popular artist in the world is for the last 20 or 30 years. I go to Madonna or Michael Jackson. And the material of their... And these are, obviously, artists with millions of fans. And I can take material of theirs that I want to hear and have no way to purchase it. No format. Not on vinyl, not on... I mean, if I'm very, very lucky, some of it, maybe, another collector has on vinyl and they're willing to put it on eBay. But their record labels that own the rights to that catalog will not sell it to me at any price. And I have written letters asking. So, I steal it because they don't give me the option to buy it in any format. And
okay,
I'm
cool. So there's a distinction.
It.
So you can't, it's your only way to get it,
yeah.
is to steal it.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's so many artists. I mean, there's tons and tons of these where they'll say, oh, well, that remix was out for, in my case, because I'm old, oh, that remix was out for 3 years in 1990, and, we never put it out again after that, or 3 months in 1990, we never put it out again after that, and it's not on any compilations, and so you can't have it.
So
the music dies.
So if it were available for sale, you would choose to purchase it, or
if there were a reasonable option to do so without DRM. I mean, far worse than DRM is purchasing song rights and distribution rights and then not publishing them. So there's no way to get a song. That's killing a song.
Right.
And if you look at the career of almost every great artist, unless they're dead, they have albums like that were created and then mothballed or not released, or they have songs that...
A lot of early hip-hop.
Yeah.
A lot of my favorite Cold Chillin', Warner Brothers records.
They're put on ice. And sometimes if, the Beatles, their rarities get released, right? But it shouldn't take four decades to free art that we want to hear, and that's a much more disrespectful treating of an artist's work than even DRM or any of the other things that, a lot of geeks like to rant about.
So now, with the exception of the rental car, do you mostly listen to digital?
Yeah, I think a lot of it for me is I have a lot of back catalog. I mean, I used to have an 800 or 900 or 1,000 CD collection of all CDs I had bought, and I ripped all of those over the years, pretty much all of them, to hard drives. So I have hundreds of gigs of music and stuff, and so there's a lot of discovery to do there. that it's like I haven't listened to this song in 10 years and I want to hear it, or I want to rehear it in a new context. Like I was listening to, you know, Tom York's album from a year and a half ago, whenever that came out, and just realized there's this one part that sounds exactly like this one Prince song from, you know, 1979. And I wanted to put them back to back. And that's the stuff that I love recontextualizing.
Which songs were those?
So the Tom York song was the single Harrow Down Hill from his album. And the Prince song was a alternate version of Just As Long As We're Together, which is off of his album called Prince, his second title, his self-titled second album.
I think there's another question, but it's great. It's great hearing, you know, people talk about Prince's first or second, or his second album, his first.
Well, yeah. First, I mean, yeah. I don't. I'm fairly well known for being a huge Prince fan, so it's a big part of my musical knowledge.
So then, in terms of how do you feel about sharing music? So, like, I'm not into Prince. Mm-hmm. You love Prince. I'm like, Prince. Prince peaked at Purple Rain. That was his only good album. And you're like, no, you've got to hear Soft and Wet.
So he's a great example of somebody who has these catalog songs from the 90s and later that, in his case, you know, it would be like, well, if you're one of the 300 people that hit his website on this day, you would get this MP3. Right, and so there's a lot of randomness to where you can't, it's not like he's on Warner Brothers anymore and you can just say, oh, this is the catalog titles. So a necessary part of understanding his catalog in the context of a full career is the community curation of the content. Is me making a playlist for you to hear it, right? And narrating it for you and saying, now these things, these are interesting because of this.
And then if I get that from you and become a huge Prince fan, but I've gotten the collection, I've got the Prince discography from you, then I don't necessarily buy it.
So in his case, because, well, not right now, but intermittently, he's been able to put his whole catalog on online, and you can buy it. A lot of it he put up without DRM. There's a great opportunity to buy the song from the artist on their own site in a way that they control. And I actually don't object to DRM in that situation. Like, I think that's fine.
So what, I guess one of the things I'm really trying to get to or trying to figure out is where we draw our ethical lines. And so you have a lot of personal experience with the record industry and you've drawn a line around, well, if it's not available anywhere else, then except for like file sharing.
Well, and then there's things that are disposable, right? There's songs where I know the artist's name attributed to this song had pretty much nothing to do with it. They're certainly not going to have a lasting career. This is a kind of a zero artistic merit fun thing to make my butt move. You know, I find it hard to justify.
It's a value justification.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, this isn't worth $5, but if I could get it for free.
But I also have done it for discovery, right? Where I'm like, I don't know this artist. Everybody's raving about it. Let me hear it. And then if I like it, I will buy it on iTunes or on Amazon or whatever.
Cool. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, let me know when you put it up.